Do any commission members have ex parte contracts or contacts to disclose?
No.
I have one that I have to bring up, which is I was contacted by phone by Commissioner Dan Salzman, who informed me that it was his wish that all the funds would be given to the Housing Bureau for the low-income housing. And I listened to that. I also informed him of our discussions in the past about the betterment being applied to the immediate area. He asked if he should come and testify or if he should write a letter, and I said the commission would always appreciate either. And that was the end of the conversation. I don't believe it impacted my opinions on the project. It helped to make a little fuller understanding, but I don't think it's going to affect my ability to see this in a neutral manner. Okay, Hillary, let's take it away.
Okay. Thank you all for being here again. Since this is a continued hearing, I'm going to briefly just reorient you and then just highlight the changes and my suggested conditions of approval. So this is the zone map for the site. It's zone CXD. We are primarily...
You know, Hillary, just a second. Yeah. We lost two commissioners.
They were not here for the first hearing, so...
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. CXD is the east half of the block. RXD is the northwest quarter block that is identified as a future affordable housing development. The maximum floor area ratio is 9-1 with the 3-1 bonus in the CX portion and 6-1 in the RX portion. Maximum height is 300 feet in the CX portion and 100 feet in the RX. This is just an aerial view of the site. You can see the park blocks there to the west. The approval criteria is Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines 33825040, modifications that will better meet design review requirements, and 33510255E, Central City Master Plan Approval Criteria. This is a view of the site. It is primarily a vacant lot right now with a two-story building on the south 8th block. So this is the proposal in a nutshell. It's a new 19-story building, 180 hotel rooms, 175,000 square feet of office space. That's actually 11 floors, not 10. And ground floor retail, they are proposing Central City Master Plan in order to obtain 3.43-1 additional FAR over the max allowed, and that would be transferred from one of two landmarks. 130 feet is not the actual height of the building. I'll let them say that. 255, okay. Sorry, I didn't change that from last time. They're requesting two modifications, one to reduce the size of one of the two required loading spaces and to reduce the width of long-term bike parking spaces from 24 inches to 18 inches. So the last time we were here, they were proposing two separate public benefit options, and one of those was to provide funding to Portland Parks and Recreation for the development of the master plan and provide a financial contribution to the Affordable Housing Fund. The second option at that time was to provide the same parks contribution, but to construct an affordable housing project on the RX-zoned portion of the site. They've since removed the first option and now are just proposing the park's contribution and construction of the affordable housing component. This is a lot of text up here. It's also described this way in the staff report, but just to give a shorthand version, The affordable housing building would be a minimum 60-unit residential building. 33% of those units would be deemed affordable at 80% MFI, and those would be held affordable for a period of 40 years. Last time it was 30 years. Those entitlements they're proposing to obtain through the Type 3 process, and permits for that development would be secured prior to obtaining certificate of occupancy for the Broadway Tower. And they're estimating that that affordable housing project would be substantially completed by June 30th, 2020. With regard to the parks contribution, they're proposing $375,000 to be donated to the Portland Parks Foundation by June 1st, 2017. That master plan, it would be used to solely for the purpose of creating a master plan for the South Park blocks. And they would address vegetation management, restorative improvements to historic elements of the park, replacement of infrastructure, and expanded use of the park. That process is envisioned to begin January 2018 and would take about a year. They are proposing improvements to Block 11 that the developer would undertake immediately following construction of the affordable housing project or concurrently. Brett Horner from Parks is here. Parks is not necessarily willing to commit that Park Block 11 be the block that receives these improvements. Their concern is that the master plan might identify other park blocks that are in greater need. So I'll let Brett speak to that in a moment. I recommended four conditions of approval. One you've seen before, that any original materials or materials of good quality that can be salvaged from the existing building shall be salvaged. At the last hearing, they were showing a garage gate 20 feet back from the property line. They've since moved it up to 10 feet back, and that is 5 feet back from the exterior wall face of the garage, which sits 5 feet back from the property line. They received approval for a driveway design exception for this design, provided that the gate is open between the hours of 6 a.m. and 11 p.m., and that the gate opens and closes within 12 seconds or less. Because that opening is going to be exposed for the majority of the day, I suggested an additional condition that the garage sidewalls would be finished with a plaster coating for a horizontal distance of 60 feet. They are proposing a lighting scheme, and we'll speak to that suggested condition. These are my recommended conditions of approval related to the master plan public benefit proposal. I am going to read them for everybody in the room. Condition D, a multi-dwelling structure shall be constructed on the RX zone portion of the site with the following parameters. Developer will enter into a development agreement with Portland Housing Bureau by June 30th, 2017 for the multi-dwelling development. The multi-dwelling development shall contain a minimum 60 residential units, with 33% of those units deemed affordable at 80% MFI. The units deemed affordable shall continue to be affordable for a period of 40 years from initial tenancy. A covenant shall be recorded against the property ensuring affordability as outlined. The square footages and number of bedrooms in the affordable units shall be proportional to the market rate units. Entitlements shall be obtained through the Type 3 process, and permits for construction shall be obtained prior to receipt of a temporary or permanent certificate of occupancy for Broadway Tower at 1455 Southwest Broadway. The multi-dwelling development will be constructed to substantial completion by June 30th, 2020. The developer shall have annual check-ins with Portland Housing Bureau to ensure compliance with affordability thresholds. And then condition E, related to parks, the applicant shall provide the proposed contribution to Portland Parks and Recreation and make improvements to Park Block 11 according to the following parameters. Developer shall donate $375,000 to the Parks Foundation by June 1st, 2017, to be used exclusively for the development of a South Park Blocks master plan to begin during fiscal year 2017-2018. Developer shall construct improvements on Park Block 11 per the scope outlined in the resultant master plan. These improvements shall be constructed simultaneously or immediately following construction of the Phase 2 affordable housing development, which will be substantially completed by June 30th, 2020. Based on the letter that we received from Parks yesterday, we might want to discuss massaging that condition a little bit if you come to the point where you're ready to approve the project. And I did want to point out that I did pass out the letter from Parks and also a letter from the Downtown Neighborhood Association in support. So your options today are to approve the proposal with conditions as recommended, approve the proposal with revised conditions, or reject the staff report and request the applicant return with revisions. And Kurt Krieger from PHB is here. This is Brett Horner from Parks.
Okay.
Kurt Krieger is also here from PBOT if you have questions about the garage entrance.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. Hillary, did you meet with the applicant between last time they were through here?
A couple times.
Yeah. Did the discussion of not making the improvements in the park come up in any of those meetings?
Not making them? In a way. That's an option to propose.
We have a letter that's quite different from the package we reviewed. And so I was just wondering if that was part of the discussion or
the letter from Parks? You mean not making the improvements on Park Block 11?
Correct.
Yeah. Parks has stated that they want to focus their improvements based on what the master plan identifies as having the greatest need. This letter, that stipulation was a bit of a surprise, but...
Well, what I'm confused about is that, you know, as you've described in terms of what the project was proposing, mm-hmm. was that the developer would make those improvements.
Right.
And so I'm confused as to why Parks doesn't want the developer to make those improvements.
I think they do. I just don't think that they want to commit that those improvements would take place on that park block,
okay.
that specific park block. But Brett Horner can speak to that more specifically.
Okay, let's do that then.
Good afternoon. I'm Brett Horner. I'm the planning manager with Parks, and thank you for having us again. I'd like to clarify, Hillary wasn't quite correct. We do not oppose Block 11 improvements. What we are concerned with is we cannot use Parks SDC funds to make those improvements. They'd have to be funded through other funds, so non-park funds.
Thank you. Okay. So the improvements would still be made by the developer according to the proposal on Block 11. Is that correct?
Maybe Hillary can clarify it, but the way I read the staff report is it does not identify where the funds would come from. It just says the developer's on the hook to make them happen. There may be other grant funds or other funding sources that may come into play, but Parks SDC funds are not available to make those improvements.
Okay. A little bit clearer. Anybody have any questions for Brett or Hillary?
Is there another preferred location for these improvements?
As Hillary stated, no, there isn't quite right now because we don't have the plan done, so we don't know where the priorities are going to be, which block.
Okay. Hillary, I've got a couple of questions about the conditions. Do you know, are there any materials worth salvaging in the existing structure?
I don't know that.
Okay.
There may be none.
Okay. Also, on the affordable housing condition, Is there a deal penciled between the developer and the Portland Housing Bureau as of today?
No.
Okay. So some amount of process to get there is envisioned.
Yeah, I believe they're intending to draft that in the coming year or so.
Okay. I'll have more questions on that later. Thanks.
Brett, in the last part of your letter, it says PPNR reserves the right to allocate implementation funds to the blocks that are most in need of improvement for the safety and livability of park users. When you say allocate implementation funds, you mean SDC funds. You don't mean the developers.
That's correct. Yeah, and we can meet the timeline that's been outlined by the development proposal. So the timeline isn't so much of a concern. It's just a matter of we need to identify where the source is.
When you were here last time, I think you mentioned a figure of 700,000 was kind of a rough number that you might apply to each park block.
I think the commission actually came up with that number. We don't really have a magic number, or maybe it was the landscape firm for the developer that maybe took a stab at that. We envision it would be quite several hundred thousand dollars, probably per block at least, as a minimum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions before we have the applicant proceed?
I have one question. So, Hillary, just to be clear, I'm looking at it on the screen. Your recommendation is that the developer constructs the improvements on Block 11.
Right.
Okay.
They have proposed taking responsibility for that,
okay,
and then dedicating those improvements to parks.
I should add, we would like the commission to consider, after the plan is done, if there is another block that is a higher priority for improvement, that it be considered for this funding rather than just designating it to Block 11. It's a linear park, but could easily be the next block up or down from this one that might need the better first, first implementation.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much for coming back.
Thank you.
Okay, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. There we go.
Oh, I have one question for Hillary. Hillary, we had a discussion last time on birds.
Uh-huh.
And I thought the discussion was about birds flying into the glass, not roosting. What was your recollection of that? Because the applicant has responded about roosting, but not about birds hitting the glass.
I understood that conversation to be about roosting on the side elements holding up the glass planes.
Yours too?
That was my understanding as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Which doesn't mean there's not an issue with birds flying into the glass, but that's more universal.
Yeah. Okay. Now you can start.
Okay, thank you very, very much. I'm Phil Bile with GBD Architects, address 1120 Northwest Cooch Street, Suite 300. With me is project lead designer Michael Marcus, also of GBD Architects. And if you have questions of the ownership, we have Brian Olendoff in the room as well, representing the developer. Thanks for the chance to come back. We think we listened pretty well. We hope that you agree in the end. We're anxious to move forward to an approval today, if at all possible. We've got construction guys out there waiting to start moving pretty quickly, so there's a lot of momentum ready for us to go as soon as we get through the entitlement process. We're going to quickly go through. Michael's going to go first through the architectural changes that were discussed and proposed. We've got responses, good responses, I think, to each one of those. So he'll go through those initially, and then I'll follow up with the public benefit stuff.
Thank you. Thanks again for being here. We're happy to be back. And I think last time you guys gave us a lot of things to really look at and consider. So with that, I'll just give a quick overview of the building, just mostly the renderings. This is the view looking south on Broadway. You can see Raven and Rose Restaurant on the lower right, just in front of it. The view over the park blocks from the Elliott Tower. You can see how that fits in the skyline of Portland. This is the Broadway entrances. You can see the hotel, which now has been publicly announced. It's Radisson Red. It's a hotel focused on sort of the millennial generation, smaller rooms. Really excited to have them on board for this project. You can see the office tower entrance as well. This is the retail corner at the southeast corner. And last time we heard kind of there were five items that you wanted us to look at, and we're going to kind of go through those one by one, and then, as Phil mentioned, we'll wrap up with the public benefit discussion. The first one was the glazing at the northeast corner. It's where the restaurant kind of meets Columbia and Broadway. And the comment was, you know, could you look at making this a little bit more transparent, maybe removing the terracotta? This is the view here. You can see right now we were showing about a 12-foot-6 dimension along Broadway of terracotta. And I kind of wanted to explain why the terracotta was used in the first place. You know, with this sort of 17 stories above of hotel and office in this crystalline box, the terracotta to us really helped reinforce and have a really strong base that really kind of added a different texture and responded to the kind of historic neighborhood of the park blocks. And the frames really help accentuate the entry pieces along Broadway, and also the restaurant and the upper terrace piece that would actually kind of frame the view towards the carriage house there as well. So the terracotta really helped kind of complete the frame and really create a substantial base to the bottom of the building. We eroded that base a little bit on the southeast corner, really trying to accentuate the retail component of it as a different programmatic element going on the ground floor piece there. So this is a view of what we showed at the first hearing. You can see that the terracotta element here is about 12-foot-6 in dimension, and it's a little over 2 feet along Columbia there. So what we looked at was, what if we remove that? And what you end up with is there's another column that was hidden behind there. And you end up kind of eroding the corner a little bit too much. You have a lot of different geometries kind of coming together. And we worked with Hillary on this as well, just sort of, it didn't seem as clear of a response. Your balcony here doesn't have the protection on the sides. Your balcony and your lounge space is not focused towards the carriage house. And then your main canopy here doesn't really complete itself in as strong of a manner. Plus, we have the condition of the lower canopy on the north end. Kind of, how do you resolve those? So there were a lot of issues that were still there. So what we worked with Hillary and the rest of the staff was to actually just reduce the amount of terracotta as much as we could. So we lopped off about 30 inches of it. So it's only a 10-foot dimension here. That allows us to capture the entrance canopy here for our two-story gallery lobby, as well as sort of framing the restaurant and the hotel lounge component as well. We feel pretty comfortable with this and like what it's doing for the building, but of course we're willing to talk with you about that today as well. This is a plan view of what we showed last time. You can see that 12-foot-6 dimension. What we've done here, I have it left it dashed. We've reduced it as much as we can. We actually have a column line here that's supporting all the floors above the building, so we've kind of closed the gap as tight as we possibly could with that dimension. And this is what it does on the second floor. You can see it captures that terrace there as well. So it's really only a 10-foot dimension along Broadway. That's what it looks like in elevation. And as it wraps around the corner on Columbia, it's just a little over a 2-foot dimension there. The second item was the parking garage entrance. Previously, we had shown our security gate that would be open from 6 a.m. until 11 p.m., about 22 feet back from the property line, 5 feet to the building face, and then 17 for that. That was PBOT's interest in having a car not block the queuing, or a car queuing not blocking the sidewalk. We actually agree with you that we like it a little bit closer. So we've moved it to 5 feet back from the building face. We've added access controls, electronic access controls, and I think we described last time that the key system for the hotel, that they don't have a front desk. You can check in on your phone, you scan your phone, get in the elevator. So the same system would be used for the parking control. So a hotel guest arriving late could scan their phone, and they would have prepaid for their parking, and they could get access to the garage. Hillary mentioned what we're proposing. Originally, we proposed painting the sidewalls of the garage. This is the section of the garage ramp going down. You can see the gate right here, which will be open all but the late night hours. And what we were proposing were to use vertical strip lights on the sidewalls that kind of got a little bit closer in density and length as it followed the ramp, just to create some nice visual interest coming down into the ramp. We also have more density of light at the beginning of the ramp so that it's more well illuminated. And we agree with Hillary that the finish level on the sidewalls is something we should definitely consider. The third item, you asked us to look at the balance of kind of vision and spandrel glazing. This is an image of the hotel component of the building. And we were really using the curtain wall here to kind of stitch together the different uses, and that's why the spandrel glass is a little bit more dense in the hotel level. What we were able to do was look at a few of the rooms and give them a little bit more glass with some rearranging of the rooms. We've essentially identified a few areas, and all the floors are identical, so stacking them up, each six floors. We've actually been able to add 1,200 square feet of vision glazing, so reduce that spandrel amount as much as possible, and it does make for a much better room. You can see there's a rendering here of a typical room. The Radisson room, typical room, is actually a much smaller room, so proportionally the window is quite large in the room. Most of the units are a king room, so it's single occupant. So we feel that it's a nice balance of light into those rooms. The fourth one was the bird roosting concerns. And so couldn't find a pigeon consultant, but we did try. we talked to several people. First was we kind of looked at what are some of the buildings around town that might have similar conditions. And you can see in your package there, that we looked at 12W Indigo, which is a very similar. You can see they have some fin wall conditions with balcony projections, very similar to what we have proposed here in Broadway Tower. This condition here on the, I guess that would be the northwest or southwest side, very similar condition, and actually they have a piece that comes down below where it's actually sheltered from above. So I spoke to the general manager that managed Indigo from Girding Eland, and she said they have not had any bird roosting issues whatsoever, even on the top of the building where the curtain wall extends way over the top of the building. They've had no issues whatsoever. We also talked to our curtain wall manufacturer. They haven't had any issues. They've done this sort of flyby, what they call the flyby condition, which is the fin extension. They haven't had any problems either. And lastly, I had a conversation with Mary Coolidge from the Audubon Society about birds. I wanted to become a little bit more educated. And she said it's really, you know, what we're talking about are pigeons downtown primarily. And it's really hard to predict where roosting would happen. But we did talk at length about kind of what makes for good roosting conditions, and a lot of that is it's about protection. You'll see pigeons, you know, where they want protection from the elements, rain, snow occasionally, but also from predators from above, so urban hawks and things like that. But we don't have any of those conditions really. So we're not really providing the shelter from above, which is what they really look for in roosting conditions. So that was the research we've done, and we feel pretty confident that we're not. Yeah, and most of the birds are on the lower portions of the building, and ours doesn't even start till the third floor. So a lot of that condition is actually mitigated in that respect. The last item was the entrances along Broadway. There are some questions about the permeability of that and having it be more welcoming. In the previous version, we had shown a planter kind of between the hotel and the office entrance. And we agree, you know, it can be a little bit more welcoming. We liked that it softened that edge. So what we've proposed is actually exchange that planter out for another staircase that's about 16 feet in width. And what that allows is it's a more welcoming gesture, allowing people to come in underneath the grand canopy there. We've also integrated some seating plinths that have different heights along here that I think will help activate that entrance piece as well. You can see here we have two 16-foot wide staircases entering into the building here. It really does create some nice seating elements along the front face of the building, especially having a hotel. I think that's important. We did keep the planter at the south end. I think it's a nice terminus for all of this, and it helps bring the focus back to the entrances here along Broadway. You can see the different sections cut through Broadway here, the different seating elements. I think I'm glad you guys recommended we look at this. I think it does make for a much better entrance to the building and creating a nice active space out in front. 3D view of that. And Phil's going to talk about the Central City Master Plan.
Any questions about architecture before we jump into the next phase? No? Okay. Where's my mobile mic? Remembering why we are here with the Central City Master Plan process, obviously our application is asking for a floor area transfer of 68,514 square feet above and beyond what we can otherwise earn through code prescribed paths, including base zoning and additional bonus FAR. So the diagram up on top illustrates that the first 3-to-1 FAR comes from our bike locker bonus provision, and the balance needs to come from a transfer. We have, of course, identified the source of that landmark transfer, that landmark FAR. It's the U.S. Customs House in Northwest Portland. The deal is already cut for that, and so it's ready to be executed upon approval of this entitlement process. So that's all ready to go. Why did we do it? A couple of reasons. First of all, the marketplace is there to support a building of this quality. When you build buildings of this quality, you need economy of scale. And we have, within the development envelope, the capacity to take on a lot more FAR than you can otherwise get there by code. So we have an ambitious project. We have a project that we consider to be very, very market-driven and very much anticipated. But it doesn't work without the additional FAR. We cannot get enough FAR, cannot get enough economy of scale without getting enough square footage onto the site in order to do what we're hoping to accomplish. So that's the fundamental reason that we're pulling the FAR over to the site. There's also a prescribed way to do that, which is the Central City Master Plan process. Our zoning is unusual in that because of the RX zone property immediately next door to us on the quarter block site, we could otherwise reallocate the FAR on the site and simply do what we want to do without the Central City Master Plan process. And as Hillary pointed out at our first hearing, in a couple of years, when the new Central City Plan is implemented, we'll have a direct path to be able to do this very same thing by simply buying the amount of landmark FAR that we need. So this is going to repeat a little bit, I'm sorry, what Hillary has already said, but I'm trying to illustrate what the differences are between what we proposed last time versus this time, and it's mostly in the additional amount of detail. So relative to Parks Bureau, the donation, of course, would be paid on or before June 1st, 2017, which is several months in advance of when they would actually execute or begin their master plan process, so it gives them time to go through the process of selecting a design team and ramping that whole effort up. The Parks Bureau Master Plan, they've advised that a January 2018 start date is workable for them, so we've written that into the proposed language. We are sticking to our guns that says the developer will build the Block 11 improvements as part of an extended construction contract for the affordable housing project, and it will integrate the master plan improvements that ultimately get developed. That's obviously quite risky for us. We don't know what those improvements are, but you know, the pace and sort of momentum of the project doesn't allow us really to pursue any other path at this point. We need to commit to going ahead and being part of that solution. Honestly, we had expected to be able to somehow integrate the SDC fees in a dedicated fashion that for this specific block. So the fact that we cannot do that is new information, but it's not going to deter us from moving forward. We believe that we can strike an agreement with Parks Bureau and be a good teammate in executing the master plan and help guide that to a successful end solution. So we're still ready to go. And then in the end, we would dedicate the improvements to the Parks Bureau. The affordable housing piece has changed just a little bit, again, more clarity. Same number of units, 33% of what is a minimum of 60 units. As we get into the design of the project, it's quite likely that the number of units can grow. There's some code massaging that's being considered by BDS that would allow for a 5/2 construction instead of 5/1 construction. So it may be that there's a different way for us to look at how we can maximize the density on that property. So obviously, pro rata to however many units we put would be 33% of those to be affordable. 80% median income is the same target. We have expanded the length of the term to 40 years. You heard Mr. Krieger last hearing say that a 30-year term is a long-term proposition in their view, but we've added another 10 years to that in terms of commitments to keep it as affordable housing. We have had ongoing discussions about being part of the multi-program. We understand that we can only get approved once we file our application for a 10-year commitment. And so the project is at risk in the future for having to reapply and gain those additional incentives for maintaining affordability. But we're taking that risk. We know that we annually have to check in with the Portland Housing Bureau to identify that we are in compliance with the affordable housing criteria. That's understood. A big one, I think, is that we are committing, regardless of what the new code legislation says about whether or not it's a Type 2 or a Type 3 application, we're going to do Type 3. We think it's the right thing to do. And then we finally, I have agreed to secure the entitlements and permits for the affordable housing project before we get certificate of occupancy in the tower. So that's as well a huge risk for us, but we've got time to do that. But we've also said that we're going to get the affordable housing project constructed no later than June 30th of 2020. The next slide is a schedule diagram that you have in your packet, I understand. I'm sorry, it's a little hard to identify here, but the point I'm trying to make with the schedule is that we have a reasonable amount of time to accomplish these three fundamental tasks. The top bar is phase one, that's construction of Broadway Tower, and we start in June and we finish up in June of 2018. So we have, if we look at phase two, which is the design and construction of, or design and permitting for the affordable housing tower, we probably start that first quarter of 2017, which gives us more than adequate time to get all the way through the design and entitlement process. These are quarters, not months. So yeah, that can be a little bit deceiving. So we are very confident that we can be entitled and permitted by the time that we need our certificate of occupancy. And obviously, we have the incentive to do that. And then construction for that would follow immediately thereafter. We don't know yet what the construction period is going to be for the affordable housing. We don't know that it will be bigger than 60 units or not. This is plenty of time for a 60-unit project. So that would allow us to finish up here about the third quarter of 2019. How does that integrate with the master planning? The master planning would start in, the consultant selection process would actually start in advance of the master plan. The master plan process actually starts here in January of 2018. Allowing them a full year to execute that plan gives us at least 6 months for further design work to go on for the first stages of that project, which we would propose to be Block 11 inclusive of that, and then implementation immediately following that, adding another 6 months. To remind you, for the sake of trying to equate what we're proposing in a dollar and cent standpoint, which I know isn't the source of public benefit, but just to make everybody comfortable that we are contributing a significant amount in the public benefit capacity. Park Avenue West, if we're just looking at dollars out of the developers' pockets that have gone to funding improvements, Park Avenue West was $1.1 million. The Hoyt Street project was $160,000. We are $1,775,000, largely because of the contribution of the land value. So we're at four times on a dollar per square foot standpoint what the previous projects that have been held up previously as examples. Remind you that we are doing a serious job of removing contaminated soils, a serious economic burden to the project. The tax increment that comes to the site is enormous, largely because of the additional FAR, but from where we're starting today, just the $68,600 is worth about $290,000 in additional property taxes every year. The entire building, it will add another $1 million per year to the tax rolls in downtown Portland. That's above and beyond what's being paid today. Creating lots of new jobs. The interesting thing about this project, and it's largely commercial, is that we do create jobs as opposed to a housing project. Obviously means a lot of money relative to gain in household earnings. both locally and along in the region. We think that the FAR transfer in the end is a large part of creating the public benefit in that it allows us to dedicate that $1.4 million in discounted land value to go against the cost of developing the affordable housing project. If you look at the cost of building multifamily housing, it's about $300 to $350 a square foot. So building 220 units is $6.5 million worth of new construction that's being done without any public subsidy. What's pretty cool about even the 80% MFI is that it enables people who are going to be perhaps working in the hotel next door to be able to live in this building. When the affordable housing project is up, we're going to help by help improve safety in the park by providing eyes in the park 24 hours a day, and both of which I think are long-term tangible public improvements. So, and we mentioned previously that were we to be here in a couple years from now, we would just be executing the land transfer from landmark FAR, and we wouldn't be going through the CCMP process. So. Happy to answer questions. I'm sorry you can't read the red writing. We talked about that.
Magic, huh? Magic writing.
What it says off to the right is that we're asking for approval on each of the design changes that have been requested. Michael's done a careful job of responding to all of those. And we also are asking for approval of the proposal of the public benefit piece to enable us to move forward with construction very, very soon.
Thank you. Any questions for the applicant?
So I have a few that are specific to the housing condition. Phil, so you've increased the term on the housing from 30 years to 40 years, understanding that there is only funding available currently for 10 years of operation.
Right.
Why 40 years instead of 60 years, when 60 years is a more typical term for affordable housing developments? I mean, if you're already going 30 years beyond your comfort zone, why not the additional 20 years to make it look like all other affordable housing?
Well, that question may be a little over my head. I'm sorry. I think it was in direct response to a request that we look at a longer term.
Okay.
And honestly, the buildup of additional requests that lather onto the whole public benefit package is going to be extremely significant, and we want to make sure that we have some way to control that.
Okay.
Capacity.
So I'm guessing that you had some conversation with Kurt Krieger and folks in the public Portland Housing Bureau since you were last here. Do you have an idea of what the path forward to an agreement looks like in between, you know, where you are today and when you have an inked deal on the housing and the commitment from the multi-program?
I think we do. Personally, I've not been through the process before. Our developer has been before.
Okay.
They've had a couple of conversations about initiating that process as soon as we get through entitlements. As our schedule suggests, we need to be we need to have that development agreement done by probably, yeah, we'd really targeted to have that that agreement done by the first quarter of about 2017.
Mm-hmm. I will likely ask for a little more specificity around that process, you know, how you get from here to that agreement.
Well, we have the experts
there's no
here
plan,
to talk about that.
There's no plan B outlined, right? So it's like all the eggs are in one basket with respect to the commitment to affordable housing. This is a great place for 20 units of affordable housing to land, and I think that it's a strong proposal. I'm a little bit worried that it's not 60 years, that it's not the typical term, and that the kind of very front end of this, you know, what the negotiation with Portland Housing Bureau looks like is not really clearly delineated.
Well, also the incentives for the 80% MFI are limited only to the multi-program, as I understand it. And so for us to get greater incentives would mean longer term, different change in the MFI ratio, things like that.
Currently, that's what is available. But I'm guessing over the 40-year term that you have, other programs may hopefully become available. Do you have a contract to design the housing?
Not yet.
Are you planning on having a contract to design the housing? Okay. Okay, I think that's all I've got. I might have more in a few minutes. That's it for now.
Don, anything?
Yeah, I was curious, Commissioner Salzman's proposal to have the developer kick in cash in lieu of doing this housing, affordable housing on the park block, is that something you would consider? In lieu of?
No, that wasn't his. Sure. That wasn't his suggestion. His to clarify,
okay. I wasn't.
The conversation that I had with the commissioner was rather than putting the money towards the Park Bureau.
Oh, part
in the master plan, that they wanted all the money to go to into the housing.
In addition to having the affordable housing piece on that block.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we originally had proposed in either or situation an affordable housing project or a parks project, and that evolved into, well, we like both. let's do them both. Maybe a strategic error on our part. I don't know. So,
well, there was a request that the public benefit have a benefit in the immediate area,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's where the park came in. It was a good suggestion. From my standpoint, I hope that piece stays.
Yeah,
that's pretty important from my standpoint.
Well, it's quite possible that in the ensuing conversations with parks, as we get into the master plan process, that there can be a development agreement prepared and negotiated that looks at exactly that, as opposed to us building the park for them. I mean, the range of possibilities that this master plan will unveil and discover for everybody is just enormous. So I have great sympathy for why they want to wait until the master plan is done before they start making commitments. And to a large degree, we're on kind of that same train where we don't know what we're obliging ourselves to, yet we know we need to make the obligation in order to proceed forward with the project, and we're prepared to do that. Mm-hmm. But we will get very creative on how to solve that problem in the end.
You may have to.
I'm sure we will. It's a very interesting dilemma, for lack of a better description. But
hopefully this won't be the most expensive park block in Portland history, but amphitheater, et cetera, but it well could be.
Well, we've had enough conversations with parks to understand what the nature of improvements need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a ground-up development of a new park. It's taking care of existing conditions in a restorative mm-hmm. sort of manner. Well, let's find a way to make them available to the public for the next generation or the next 100 years, because they're in pretty sorry shape right now. And everything from irrigation to sod to pavement to ADA access mm-hmm. to trees that are falling down, providing public safety issues. Lighting is horrible. Mm-hmm. All of those issues are on the table to be part of the master plan process. And so there's lots of room for good solutions.
Jessica, any questions?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Could the developer join us for a moment?
Sure.
My name is Brian Ondoff. I live and work at 1925 Northwest Norfolk Court in Portland, Oregon.
Thank you.
Did you bring any chocolate dollars with you?
No chocolate dollars.
Well,
can't afford them. I can't afford chocolate.
I would assume that you have in your hip pocket a number that you are carrying forward as to the number that would be the improvements to the park block.
Frankly, I don't, because we have not defined what that is. What I do know is that this project right now is at a tipping point, and frankly, we are spending double what we thought we were going to have to on public benefit, as Phil showed the facts on the cost of previous public benefits. You know, what was done a year ago was about $8 a foot with the contribution to parks and the discounting of the land, which is being bought for 340 a foot, going down to 200 a foot, which is $1.4 million. Those two together are $26 a foot. So we're taking this leap of faith on what the additional improvements are going to be.
Okay.
So we would love to have a cap on what that is, because this is getting ridiculously expensive for all the other benefits that we have that are coming on this project.
Understood completely, and that's why I was wondering if you'd love to have a cap, what kind of cap you might think about.
throw out $225,000.
Okay. Well, we will discuss that. Thank you very much. Other questions?
I don't have any. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. With no further questions for the applicant, you can take your seat back in the front row.
Okay.
We have somebody signed up. Kurt Krieger, please.
Here to answer questions for the Housing Bureau.
Okay. Do you have any specific questions?
I think Commissioner Livingston does.
Kurt Krieger, 421 Southwest 6th, Suite 500, Portland, Oregon, Portland Housing Bureau. Hi.
Hi. So thank you for joining us. I'm hoping that you can share your thinking on 30 years versus 40 years versus 60 years and why 40 is the most appropriate number.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. First, just so you know, that chain of events, you know, after your last hearing on the 24th, Hillary and I and Brian Orndorff met on the 7th of April, and then Brian and I talked when I was out of town in Dallas on the 13th. On our meeting on the 7th, we talked a little bit about the creative tension in your last conversation, which is you wanted more public benefit, and what I heard was that that benefit could be achieved in one of two ways. It could either be a longer term or it could be a deeper income target, perhaps 60% of AMI instead of 80% of AMI, and perhaps up to 60 years. They proffered 40 years, and since I had already agreed that 30 years in our bureau's policy is long term, I still consider that to be a reasonable effort on their part. If we were putting tax increment financing dollars into it, that would necessitate a minimum of 60 years. That is a policy that is established for the use of TIF, but it's not a policy that affects everything that we do. So, you know, long term is 30, 40 is longer. That's better. And you should know that, you know, I did offer in our initial meeting with Hillary present that if for some reason the developer didn't want to execute the affordable housing, the Bureau is in a position to buy the site outright and make it 100% affordable, for which we have funds to do. We do have excess revenues in the South Park urban renewal area. Mr. Ohlendorf said that they were committed to executing the project, and since Mr. Bowen has a prior history with housing, I know that they're fully capable of doing that, but we did make that offer. So we were willing to make it 100% affordable for over 60 years with that offer.
Are you, how certain are you that you will reach a deal that you will negotiate to a successful conclusion and this development can begin on time as proposed by the applicant?
I'm about 98% certain.
Okay.
The tax abatement, the multi that you've been referencing, is subject to a city council and county commission agreement to identify the amount of money available. The schedule mentioned by Phil Bale, looking at first quarter of 2017, is good because early in the year we have headroom in the multi-program. If it were to come late in the year, there would be a prospect that we would be fully deployed and there would be a question as to whether or not we would have abatement available. But presumably we would start this effort in the winter and we would come out of the winter of 2016 with an agreement by on or about March 30th on 2017 so that they would have that in hand. It's not a terribly complicated agreement. The multi-agreement carries with it, and I did make reference to this, I didn't go into specific detail, but there are expectations for women and minority-owned business participation in the housing design, development, and construction. So it may be that MEP subcontractors, that would be mechanical, electrical, plumbing subcontractors, would be perhaps emerging small businesses rather than the preferred contractor. So it doesn't It probably comes as no surprise, but you probably wouldn't use the same contractor on the small building that you would be on the large building anyway, so it would have to be bid separately. But we do have performance expectations, and we do monitor employment participation for women and minority-owned businesses, in addition to the affordable housing requirements.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Does the team want to rebut anything that was said? Good. Okay. I'd like to go through the staff report today. I've got the items listed in some cheat sheets here for myself.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to see if we can move through a number of the items on the staff report to see whether we support them or not, and see where we all are, and then we can discuss the ones where we need more information or more discussion. Okay, and I'm going to leave the betterment stuff to the end of that list. So the first one is any comments on the bike parking spacing modification?
No.
No. Fine with that.
Fine with that? Okay. The reduce the loading area?
I'm good with that.
Everybody good
also
with
fine.
That? Okay. Two modifications. Have they resolved the entry planter stairway?
I don't have any concern. Do you?
I think the design proposed today is a significant improvement. I think it's very attractive.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
It works well.
Okay. Bird roosting?
I've never had too much concern with that one anyway. I was more concerned about birds flying into
that's what
those
I was
wings,
too,
but
yeah.
Apparently that's not a problem on the Indigo. Why would it be yours? Yeah,
right. Okay.
Yeah. Seems reasonable.
Okay. The additional vision glass that they have provided, does that meet everybody's wishes?
It does.
Okay. The parking, the entry to the parking with the CMU treatment, they're going to clad it with the terracotta certain feet back.
So that'll be it'll be terracotta face CMU. Is that my understanding?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's stucco.
I think Hillary's condition is a little bit different.
What's your condition?
Well, what they're proposing is to wrap the terracotta in the metal
back
5 feet.
Oh, five
that's where
feet.
The gate would be, and then they propose to paint the CMU and have vertical lighting mounted. My condition suggests that should be a more refined wall texture, such as plaster.
Okay.
Skim coat or something? Is that,
yeah.
I support the condition of approval.
Okay.
I support it as well.
Okay. The northeast column glazing.
I think the composition works pretty well. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like having a little more solidity down underneath it and mm-hmm. sort of the clear glazing up above.
Mm-hmm.
The podium and upper portion mm-hmm. feel seems like a good proportion to me.
The only thought I had was that, you know, on Broadway, we have a bright lights signage mm-hmm. Allotment that allows for signs to be brighter and bigger, and that column is what you see coming up Broadway. I mean, I know they got the red box thing,
yeah.
but I'm wondering about the opportunity to place a great sign on that column makes the column less empty and, mm-hmm. and kind of then you're looking at the sign instead of a blank column.
Or a restaurant or whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah.
No,
that, we'll just leave that to discuss for a second. Mm-hmm. So we've gone through the staff report. We supported everything. We still have the outstanding betterment or the public benefit and the column glazing, but we've taken care of the modifications, everything, unless something comes up in our discussion that makes us want to go
good.
Back, okay? So I'd like to just open a general discussion about the betterment and the public benefits and how you feel what's being proposed.
I'm a little worried that there is not a dollar figure attached to the park betterment. That we are waiting on definition of that. And also, I would like to see a little more narrative in the condition for the housing that
a plan B.
A plan B. So if the deal for the multi program with the Housing Bureau does not go through, you know, then is the applicant coming back in to talk to us again about what plan B is, or you know, do we just want to lay plan B out now as a contribution to some fund?
Wasn't there a proposal at one point that they would contribute dollars if this thing fell apart with the Housing Bureau?
I don't remember if that was actually in writing or if it was just discussion we had at the last hearing.
Yeah, I saw somewhere I came across that.
There was a number that circulated. Yeah, I think
it was significant dollars.
That may have come from Kurt Krieger at the last hearing.
I can weigh in on this a little bit.
Okay.
The previous proposal did have, instead of the housing component, a financial contribution to the Affordable Housing Fund. Pretty much, I've laid this out as this is what they're proposing and this is what we're potentially approving. If they can't meet this, then they have to have a Type 3 land use review to amend this condition.
Okay.
They can go through the process with Portland Housing Bureau to map out the development agreement for that project. And if for some reason a clawback might be a part of that. So that's a deterrent in that respect. And also they would have to go through the Type 3 land use review to amend this condition.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's inherent in the process. Don't even need to worry about that. Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
Everybody okay with that clarification?
Yes.
Yeah. I am.
How do you feel about the cap that was suggested by the applicant for the park improvements?
It seems as if it would not deliver a full block.
Not enough, insufficient. That's probably true. But on the other hand, they're giving $375,000 for the design study, and this would be, I guess, a total of $225,000 on top of that would be $600,000 for the whole thing.
What I would, it's in the scope of everything. I think that's just a fine cap. But what would be my concern is that if the improvements that were required on that block were more than the 225, and the Parks Bureau wanted to make improvements on some other blocks instead, how do the rest of this block get built?
Yeah, my feeling is the funds should be dedicated to this block.
I agree.
Block 11.
I agree.
We've always talked about that.
Yeah.
Immediate impact on the neighborhood. So.
So what would happen if the improvements were $500,000 to this block?
Which they well
and
could
the Park
be.
Bureau says we want to do, you know, four blocks down, we want to do the improvements. So the money's sitting there.
And doesn't get used because they don't want to do block 11?
Right.
Yeah. I guess it sits there until they want to do block 11. So I don't think we ought to free it up to be used in other areas.
I would agree, but I don't want to penalize the developer if the master plan says, you know, it should be gold, solid gold benches, you know.
Well, in this, would it also apply in this case that if we specify block 11 and turns out block 11 is just not going to happen the way that we want it to, that there would be another type 3 to discuss that?
Yeah, if it's specified in the condition and they can't meet this condition as it's laid out, they would have to come back through Type 3 and amend this condition. So, I mean, we do have you could say that it doesn't have to go to a Park Block 11, which doesn't sound like that's what you want to do, or you could change the time frame.
Or they could just come back.
Or they could just
would the developer come back, or would the Parks Bureau come back and say they want to play it?
This is a condition on the applicant developer.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, and I think given the timeline on this, it's likely that somebody here
is going to be back.
Will still be on the commission at that point in time, so there will be some institutional memory around this.
Mm-hmm. We could all be here. It's our fate, yeah. Does 225 seem like the appropriate number? I mean, that was thrown out pretty casually. I don't know.
You know, I guess my preference would be to leave that number open. So if the developer has really full pockets and is able to spend more and accomplish the full block, that's what we want to see.
And let's, you know, state, you know, in the record that was the cap that the developer proposed, but it's not formalized, so that there's at least the beginning of a discussion.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay. Any more questions for the applicant?
I would just suggest that maybe they can respond to the idea of having to come back for a potential type 3
okay.
to amend that condition.
Which condition again?
The one related to Park Block 11.
Well, we'll come back anytime.
just bring your dollars. Chocolate dollars.
Chocolate dollars. I would imagine that if we're to follow along with our proposal, we would be incorporating the design for Block 11 into our affordable housing project. And that would get wrapped up into the same construction contract that the affordable housing project would be initiated with. And so that would find its way into the Type 3 design review application. It's possible that because we have to get that going perhaps a little bit in advance of when the master plan is done, that it's not going to be 100% informed. But I would imagine as well that we're going to have a pretty fair understanding about the elements of the master plan, and those will be prioritized. The major deficiencies will be identified, and exactly what's going to happen where won't be done, but we'll be able to do a good job of taking that information and incorporating it into our Type 3 application.
How do you feel about the cost of the park block improvements being open-ended and not capped?
Somebody's calling me to tell me something about that. Well, we came into the hearing with that understanding, is that we would have that exposure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we would obviously love to cap it at 225. If it's 300, that would be probably fine, too. But it's pretty difficult to identify what those costs are.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can, in walking up and down the parks, I can see some that are in pretty decent shape. Could be $15 a square foot for the overall site improvements. Some of them are really tough shape. Could be $30 a square foot for those. I got to believe that when the master plan is done, there's going to be a terrific solution for phasing and implementation that'll look collectively at these. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to participate in that in some capacity through the development agreement.
Okay.
We're just so early in the process of following this. It's hard to pin down those specifics.
Other questions while they're here at the table? I actually have a couple. When you showed us the entry to the Radisson before, it said red on it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still the case? Is that their brand?
That's their current prototype.
Have you figured that into your signage?
It will be.
It will fit in the signage?
It will.
And it will be illuminated?
Yes, the entire box.
Internally, okay. One.
You know, coming, this is an early prototype for them, and, you know, there have been discussions on signage on the building, and, you know, we kind of alerted them to that's not really what we do in Portland. It's a little bit more discreet and more street level, and we understand.
We have a commissioner or a chair who is not here, who is very, he grabbed me in the hall yesterday and said, you know, I am not in favor of illuminating that thing from inside. So I bring that comment out if the commissioners want to discuss that. Had you considered the Broadway bright lights option, and what's your comment on the suggestion of potentially putting a sign on that column?
Well, we don't have signage as part of our proposal, but we very much expected that those surfaces would be a great platform for a really terrific sign.
Yeah,
we are an extension of the Broadway Corridors District, and they have the best signs in town.
Yeah. That was part of the history that informed that ground floor architecture. It would be nice to kind of have that sort of theater lighting aspect.
Anything else? Okay, you guys can go sit down.
I don't know if it would be appropriate to suggest a dollar range that we could work within or not.
For the park?
For the park stuff.
Commission, how do you feel?
I'm content to not specify a dollar value and just wait until we have more knowledge on the master plan and you're back for the next type 3 where we can discuss in a little more detail. But if some greater certainty is necessary on your side, then we should talk about it.
Okay. Any other questions?
So, as I understand then, that dollar amount will get discussed with the type 3 for
correct.
The affordable housing piece?
Correct.
And we've entered in the record the 225 is...
Yeah, we heard 225
yeah.
as a desire.
At that point, we're talking about a design.
Right.
Correct. By that time, there should be a park design. Yes. The master plan will be complete. Okay.
The dollar amount getting discussed with the affordable housing, that's not one of the conditions. So...
No, and the housing project ultimately will get its entitlements before the master plan is finished,
right.
based on this schedule.
So, in fact,
I didn't follow your question.
Well, I'm just responding to what Don said regarding the getting a chance to review what the work on that park would be as part of the affordable housing Type 3 review.
Oh, I see.
But they're not really linked.
It sounds like that's
it's,
not going
it's
to
not going to roll out as smoothly as yeah. it looks like it might, right? It's going to be more episodic.
Minimally, it's a great opportunity for a check-in along the way because the master plan will have evolved quite, or the park process will evolve, and we'll be able to come up with parks and kind of joint present the building with what might happen in that block.
It'll be in your best interest to do that.
Yes, it would.
So would we then have the capability of making a decision on the dollar amount for the park blocks later on in this process?
Yeah, potentially.
Pardon?
I mean, potentially.
Yeah.
Because those two projects are, they'll run sort of in tandem with the affordable housing project, and more knowledge will be on the table at that point.
Yeah, it seems like we can't have it totally open-ended, I mean, to be fair to the developer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that more study will have gone in, yeah. and people will have a better understanding maybe of what the needs are okay. of the park blocks at that time.
So we will revisit it then later, somewhere down the line. Is that my understanding then from staff?
Well, yeah, I expect them to speak to what the potential improvements are at the affordable housing type 3.
But what I'm hoping doesn't happen is that there's a dollar amount that's fabricated at that point that is more than what the design really costs. I mean, that what we're really going to be proposing at that time is a specific design that needs to be refined once the master plan mm-hmm. is done. And I'm sure we'll have dollar amounts associated with that design at that point, but I'd rather suggest that we're being held to an acceptable design than an acceptable dollar amount.
Well, I think the condition is clear yeah. because it specifies the improvements at Block 11.
Right.
And no more than that.
And the construction of
Block, the improvements.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I see is that there will be a condition on the approval for the affordable housing project
that
that's in line with this condition here about the improvements.
Mm-hmm. That would be appropriate.
Yeah.
And my interest is not to get every penny that we can out of the developer. My intention is to try and find some kind of happy place. And I think it's best, personally, the developer and this team live in this city. They're not going anywhere, so they want to do the right thing. So I feel being open about it and resolving it. My trust is in the future when this project comes back and those decisions are made that it will be appropriate.
And the whole process so far has been very forthcoming, and we want to respond to that in a positive right. manner also.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly my sentiment.
So.
Okay, so... what I'd like to do is entertain a motion and
I will make that motion, and I think that this is a motion to adopt the staff report.
Correct.
There are no additional conditions, and no conditions are being removed. All right, I move that we adopt the staff report for the Broadway Tower.
Okay, and I'd like you to register any final comments along with your vote as Kelly calls the vote.
I need a second.
No. Second.
Commissioner Ballester?
Aye. But, my only condition is that we, in the future, revisit the dollar amount for the improvements. Make sure they're in line with what's affordable from the development standpoint.
Commissioner Molinar?
Aye.
Commissioner Livingston?
I think the building is very attractive, and you guys have been great to work with through this process. I know that this was pretty difficult, so thank you very much for coming back a couple of times and for being very agreeable to what we've asked for. I think the massing of the building is really elegant. I like the slab tower. Fabulous. The continuity of the design from where it meets the sky all the way down to the ground level is just really nice. I think it's a super addition to downtown Portland. And the changes that you were willing to make in between your last trip and this one are very well received. So thank you very much. So with that, I vote aye. Good luck.
And Chair Savin, aye.
I also vote aye. This is really a model process and a model project for us and for the city. It came in a great building. We tweaked with it a little bit. You listened to us. I think you made it better. The public benefits that we discussed are completely in line with the philosophy of the commission. You met all our wishes. You know, the Pearl office building came in the same way, came in great, couple of tweaks, came back in, and you were done. And there's a lot of chatter out in the field about how difficult design review is. Seems pretty easy to me when you do it correctly, when you have an inspired developer, when you're trying to build the city the right way. This has been a fantastic experience and not an easy one. We've had a lot of voices in here, but it's really been a pleasure. And so tell your friends that it's not so bad if they do their good work, and please keep coming back. Hi.
Well, thank you all very, very much. We truly appreciate all the help that you've given us along the way, and I will second that it's a blessing. It's an honor to be able to work with people who want to do it the right way, and we're fortunate to be involved in a team like that. Not many people will take on a project of this caliber and then be confident that they can make it work, and our client has that sense, and it's been a terrific experience so far. Thank you very much again.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
I look forward to having you at the